Welcome to yours, mine, and ours. My name is Gabrielle Cardona. I'm a relationship coach and an MBTI practitioner. Over the last 15 years as a coach, I've worked with individuals and couples. I help people understand themselves better because that's the only way that they are able then to truly accept others. And that's the key to connecting with others in a profound and meaningful way, creating peace within yourself first is the foundation. In my show, I discuss important life questions with my listeners, questions like, what are healthy relationships made of? And what makes a relationship truly successful? And what does a successful relationship even look like? Relationships are a dynamic between two separate individuals that consist of a three-part connection between them. There's a physical part, and a mental part, and an emotional part. But there are actually three different elements to a relationship that require activity on each of those three different levels. That's the two people separately. They each have their own physical and mental and emotional composition. But the third element is the entity of what they create when they come together. That's separate and distinct from each of them as individual people when they're apart. My goal in this show is to help people learn how to become a better individual, separate from any other person in the world, as well as understand what goes into bringing out the best in others, so that whenever they do come together as separate people, they can both have a phenomenal, a positive impact on the world as a combined entity, as a couple. That's in their relationships with lovers, as well as friends and family, even coworkers and strangers. It's time to truly define and understand what's mine, what's yours, and what's ours. Today, in recognition of National Women's Day, the show is going to be about what is our true power as women. Our priceless feminine talents include our ability to multitask, our creative problem solving, our talent and skills to complete tasks, our generosity and insight about life, our endurance going through tough times, and our power to influence men. This show is also going to describe what women deserve. The lurking question in every man's mind, what do women want? On paper in 2020, many women are feminists, and feminism is primarily about equality in the form of being treated in the same way as men. Well, the translation of that is the same monetary value. Women want to make the same money as men for doing the same job, because we can do it just as well as any man, sometimes even better. Also, the same political influence. Women want to be leaders in high positions, given the same consideration and respect and opportunity to make changes in the world. And the same social consideration. Women want the freedom to say and do things without being judged or being treated differently as a man when they do and say those things. And the same secular opportunity. Women want to have the same jobs, doing the same things that make them happy. And they want to be able to contribute to the growth and expansion of the world in a direct way. The bottom line, they'll never get it. Well, why not? Because they have already a personal power over men. And men feel very differently about women than they do about other men. That will never change. You cannot be equal to anything if you are not the same. Women are not the same as men, and they never will be. Now, some things about the differences between men and women that we can go ahead and consider. And ask yourself the question, think about this, if you agree or disagree with these things. Number one, men need women more than women need men, physically and mentally and emotionally, because men's performance in their daily life activities improves if they're happily involved in a healthy relationship. But that's not true with women. Women do extremely well in all of their daily activities, even when they're not with a man. They are highly functional as creatures, they are highly motivated and extremely skilled naturally. We can multitask. Number two, men are more affected by women than women are by men. That's in a good way and a bad one. Women are affected by so many things in their life, much more intensely than they're affected by a man. But every man's weakest link? A woman. No matter what a man is or has or does when he's alone or with other men, the minute a woman comes around, he completely changes inside. She has him in the palm of her hand, whether she knows it or not. Number three, women are emotionally more powerful than men. Sick women have the capacity to do exponentially more damage to a healthy man than a man who's sick could ever do to a healthy woman. A woman actually has to be sick in the first place in order to be a victim. Number four, women are more physically resilient than men. Our threshold for pain is actually much higher. Have you given birth, ladies? Well, our ability to keep going is unquantifiable. And strength is not the same thing as resiliency. Number five, women are mentally more flexible than men. And our ability, again, to multitask is a scientific fact. The brain hemispheres and the synapses in a woman crosses much more frequently and much more actively in different places of the brain where men tend to stay in the same spot. Number six, women are socially more resourceful than men. We have an infinite amount of opportunities in the form of people at our disposal, and how influential we can be over people is phenomenal. And number seven, the return on investment for a woman is exponentially greater than with a man. We're more high yield in life. I'll explain some of those things a little bit later in the show. Men are really only capable of a few things. They're important things. They're like water. Okay, water is important, but it's pretty simple. Women are like fruits and vegetables, meat, bread, milk, and cheese and eggs, a lot of different things. Well, they actually may require more work in order to be able to sustain those different things. But the investment of time and energy, when they're well taken care of, they're absolutely worth whatever you put into them. Okay, that's a lot of things. But let's just get back down to the basics. What do women actually want in real life? You know what? Contrary to popular opinion that's perpetuated by a whole lot of media venues and a whole lot of social groups, women do need things from women and men. Yes, they're capable of autonomy, but they are still interdependent. And they need men and women in order to be healthy and happy. One of the things they want most is respect. That's dignity based on something substantial, meaningful, and important, genuine respect. Also, consideration. That's thoughtful caring about their feelings, truly being important to another person. Then, of course, there's always appreciation. People want to have gratitude for the things being done and acknowledgement of those things. That's obviously true of women just as much as it is of men. And more importantly, honor. That's an elevated priority for genuinely proven importance. We want to deserve what we get. We do care about how people feel about us, and we want them to care genuinely for us too. And we want them to care about what we think. If what we have is on paper, if it's politically obtained, it's just not real because it's mandated. Whatever we may be getting from the people in our lives, if it's an obligation for those people to give it to us, it's not genuine. that can harm us because it makes us secretly, privately question our true personal value. And that creates doubt within us. That undermines our self-confidence, and it will always inhibit us reaching our full potential because it stops us from taking action when we question ourselves. Then, of course, if it's a law, it's not sincere. The people who are obeying laws are not only resentful that they're being forced to do something, they're angry at the person that they're doing it to and for. Because if it's mandatory, it's not voluntary. That means it's creating destructive energy. The way that it's getting done is going to be poor quality, and it's actually better to not do something than to do it in poor quality. We do care about how people treat us, but only if it's real. Whether we want to admit it or not, what people think and how they feel is what truly matters to humans, all humans. We are not like animals because we do care how people feel personally. It's not just about survival in our life. It's about emotional abundance. That only comes from true human connection. That's internal and not quantifiable. We do care what they truly believe. When people lie, you know what? It's bad karma. Some people call it evil. Whatever you describe or define it as, it's just plain unnatural. Lying is never good for anyone, not the liar or the victim. All it does is inevitably cause problems. Maybe not now, but it will at some point. Problems then, down the road, long term, are even harder to fix because the human factor, which is very subjective, has complicated everything. Aside from the original lie, aside from the deception itself, everything that has resulted from it makes everything bigger and worse. Ladies, do you really want to be the same as a man? That's what being equal on paper requires. Not just when it comes to quantity, but quality too. Of course not. And you know what? One of the big things, men really don't care about others' opinions, genuinely, you know, care the way we do. That's why we'll never be equal. Feminism will never make the world better because we don't actually want to be like men in any way, ever. We're too busy complaining about what we don't like about them. And we want to be treated like a lady, given attention and approval and appreciation. We want to be vulnerable because that's when we're strong. Men don't understand that. It's a paradox, it's a conundrum. We want to be protected so we can relax and be powerful. We're so capable of amazing things, but we need to be relaxed in order to do them. Men have a very different standard for behavior for other men than they do for women. And men have a very different standard for women than one that women have for other women. The fact is, the standard for women is just universally higher. And it always will be by both sexes. We don't want to be treated like a sexual object, no matter how much we may claim to. Once the sexual revolution occurred, and you know what? We can be just as sleazy as anybody else. We can have the freedom to sleep around. You know what? Women really don't want to be treated like a sexual object ever. Men genuinely do. We have the amazing ability to be fabulous in a sexual way. Women, we still want consideration, respect, and honor when we are doing and sharing and being those things with someone that we love. You know what? Men just aren't that way when they're sexual. They're raw and simple and basic, and as long as they have gratification, they really don't have the other needs that women do. We don't want to be made fun of. No matter how much we may say we're okay with it, we're actually very sensitive to and aware of the emotional responses involved in personal and intimate exchange. Men just don't care as much. One of my favorite chapters of the Bible is about the description of a good woman, a good wife. You know what? The Bible doesn't go into a whole lot of detail about what a man can do and what he should be and all the great things about him. Again, men are pretty simple. The good things they do, they're pretty good, but there aren't a whole lot of them to be done. So I'm going to read just a real brief passage, the reason that I like this book too. Starting with verse 3. Do not waste your strength on women who ruin kings. Who can find a virtuous and capable wife? She is more valuable than precious stones. Her husband can trust her, and she will greatly enrich his life. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She finds wool and flax and busily spins it. She's like a merchant's ship, bringing her food in from afar. She gets up before dawn to prepare breakfast for her household and plan the day's work for her servant girls. She goes in to inspect a field, and she buys it. With her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She is energetic and strong. She's a hard worker. And she makes sure her dealings are profitable. Her lamp burns late into the night. Her hands are busy spinning thread, her fingers twisting fiber, and she extends a helping hand to the poor, opening her arms to the needy. She has no fear of winter for her household, for everyone has warm clothes. She makes her own bedspreads. She dresses in fine linen and purple gowns. Her husband is well known at the city gates, where he sits with the other civic leaders. She makes him belted linen garments and sashes to sell to the merchants. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she laughs without fear on the future. When she speaks, her words are wise, and she gives instructions with kindness. She carefully watches everything in her household and suffers nothing from laziness. Her children stand and bless her. Her husband praises her. There are many virtuous and capable women in the world, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive, and beauty does not last, but spirituality is profound. Reward her for all she has done. Let her deeds publicly declare her praise. Okay, that's a really long list. That's a lot of stuff that she is and she does. But the important part is she has very positive energy when she's doing these things. That's why her husband and her children speak in an honorable way about her, with each other, to her, and to everyone else in the world. Now, I wrote an article on LinkedIn and want my listeners to know about my philosophy about true female power. What power do women inherently always have over a man? And what can they do with that power? Well, the article is entitled, No Healthy Woman Will Ever Be Sexually Harassed. And I mentioned this in my introduction. This is how it goes. I got off the phone one day with one of my best male friends after explaining a concept to him. No healthy woman will ever be sexually harassed. Well, he didn't buy into that statement at first because he had personally seen it with his own eyes, unfortunately many times in his life. But by the end of our conversation, he made the concession that no healthy woman will ever be sexually harassed. Why? For three reasons. When it comes to sex, a woman always has more power over a man than a man has over a woman. Then, harassment is about how you feel. A woman can always choose to feel any way she wants. And only weak men sexually harass women. Strong men don't have the need to. If a man is weak enough as a soul to truly behave in a sexually harassing way, that means he is easily stoppable. The woman just needs to know the tricks. What is a man's greatest weakness? Women, period. We, and by that I mean us girls, may not always have the same physical strength in a raw way. We may not always have the social power in certain settings. We may not always have the same political influence on paper. And we might not always have the same emotional neutrality. But even if we don't have certain kinds of resiliency, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And every man in the entire world's weakest link is a woman. Even more, a woman that he loves and that he wants. The problem is that too many women simply don't know that. They don't understand that no matter what a man can do when he's either alone or with other men, he immediately becomes incapable of being and doing if and or a woman inflicts her wiles on him. A man only has enough blood for one head at a time. Don't we already all know this, ladies? Then the actual definition of harassment is aggressive pressure or intimidation. This does not specify any particular words or behavior that a man could display, could behave, could perform that are universally accepted. That means it's subjective. What may be very intimidating to me would make my older sister laugh out loud. And what my husband would think is an act of aggression, to me, looks clearly like a desperate cry for attention. It's all in the eye of the beholder. A woman can choose how she will decide to interpret a man's behavior. That means that any woman who is truly confident in herself can choose to feel however she wants about what was said or done by anyone, about the person saying it or doing it, about what she wants to do about it. And if there is something truly wrong with what was done, then she can do something about it. Feelings only exist in nature to give you the energy to motivate you to action, which is the third point. Only weak men sexually harass women because they're afraid of women and they don't have the ability to be with a healthy woman. Inappropriate behavior is only displayed by inappropriate people. True men with dignity and honor and class don't ever need to inflict pseudo power in a destructive way by trying to prove to themselves and women that they have an ability to do something that clearly they don't, because if they did, they would do it in a more impressive way. Predators go for weak women because they know they won't fight back. If the man had true strength, then first of all, they wouldn't be predatory. Second, they would be comfortable with a matching of wits with a woman. They would even enjoy it. And in legitimate courtship, which is an actual pursuit of a legitimate relationship, a real man is attracted to a real woman, one who's smart and fun and confident and humble. Yes, you can be all of those things as a woman at the same time, again, contrary to popular American opinion. If a man said or did something that was sexually aggressive or intimidating, all a woman would have to do is three things. First, look at him in the same way you would look at a five-year-old trying to hide ice cream under their covers and say, "You're not serious, are you?" Second, if he responded aggressively to that, say, "Wow, you're really freaking out right now, aren't you?" And laugh out loud in his face. Then, if he tried to keep going, say, "It's okay. I understand you're having a hard time, and I won't hold it against you. Don't worry. I won't tell any of your friends or coworkers what you've done. It'll just be our little secret." Then walk away. You know what? You've just castrated him. And the bottom line, you wouldn't want to work with a man like that, even if you won a lawsuit that you decided to file against him. So walk away. Just get another job. I promise you, there's something so much better for you out there. If you think you're worth it, you won't have any problem walking away from toxicity. If you don't think you're worth it, then you need to get personal help. And it's got nothing to do with him or what he just did. Which brings me to my final point. Too many people in this country are just looking for a fight, especially for attention and for money. I don't think that most of the men who are accused of sexual harassment have actually done something predatory. They've just irritated a woman and she does not know how to effectively communicate. And that's just as much her fault as it is his. And it's very much her problem, actually more than his. Feminism has created the illusion that women are equal to men, but they still want to be treated like a woman. Well, you can't have it both ways. We're not equal to men because we're just not the same as men, and we never will be. Now, when we're talking about the difference between men and women, we, again, have differences that complement each other, strengths and talents and abilities that are very pleasing to each other. And when we know and appreciate the differences, we can use our strengths and talents and abilities to bring out the best in each other. But I've noticed lately that a very popular trend has developed in contemporary United States. And I'm just going to say it here because I haven't traveled recently enough to know if that's actually something that's saturated the entire world. But people apologize in a backhanded way. A couple examples actually. Here's, well, I'm sorry, you have a problem. Or how about, I'm sorry, you can't handle the truth. Or yeah, there's a, I'm sorry, you're too stupid to know the difference. How about, oh, I'm sorry, you're so pathetic. Has anybody else noticed that popular trend? Does it bother anyone as much as it bothers me? When you apologize, you're actually addressing two different issues. First, you're acknowledging that what you've said or done is wrong, and you regret doing it or saying it. But then you're also recognizing that the thing that you've said or done has hurt someone else. Their feelings are a totally separate subject from what was said or done. Now, what if you only regret one of those things? What if you regret what you've done because you know it was the wrong thing to do, but you really don't care about the pain it caused because maybe perhaps you think a certain individual deserves to suffer? Or what if you don't really think that what you've done is wrong, you know, but you do genuinely care about their pain? Is there any way to acknowledge and address one without including the other? Because if you don't actually feel the same about both, can we make them mutually exclusive? Well, when I got married, I realized that my husband would apologize for things that he didn't really regret. He just didn't want to have to deal with an upset wife. So I decided I would give him a marital get-out-of-jail-free card. It was a very simple four-word phrase. I'm sorry, once removed. The translation is, I'm sorry that I'm not sorry. It was my way of letting him say, I genuinely do care about your suffering because I love you. But we're just going to have to agree to disagree about the morality of my actions that caused your suffering. I actually don't think that what I did was wrong. That helps us to remain honest with each other. It encourages forgiveness and tolerance and encourages both of us to stop thinking so much of ourselves and our own feelings more than the feelings of the person we love. What would happen if you allowed the people in your life to have that get out of jail free card? Well, try it out with someone that you love, that you trust and respect, and see. If you gave someone the opportunity to say, I'm sorry, once removed, would you be forgiving and would they be honest? Now, I recently saw a post of a woman describing how she has reached a dangerous level of self-acceptance. What? When I first read that, I actually had to do a double take. Well, apparently she feels 100% okay with her body and how she looks, according to her. But then she has a very suggestive photo of herself that to me screams, I desperately need attention. Okay, every human needs attention, whether they want to admit it or not. Now, obviously, extroverts need more quantity of attention than introverts. But when introverts need it, it really has to be the best of the best quality in order for them to be satisfied. Well, what does that mean? Okay, well, people's eyes on you is attention. Talking to you is attention. Listening to you is attention. And then thinking about you is also attention. Giving anything to you in any way is a form of attention. But the key, again, it needs to be truly, genuinely voluntary and sincere. The person needs to want to be with you to give you that attention. Sometimes people just give you attention because what you're doing is inappropriate. Yeah, that's attention, but it's dirty. And the person doesn't really want to be with you. Sometimes people give you attention because it's mandatory according to something else, like I mentioned before. Yeah, that's attention, but it's insincere, and they're going to stop as soon as they get the chance. Sometimes people give you attention because you're upsetting them. Yeah, again, that's attention, but it's destructive to you both because the energy is negative. Large quantities of attention are only good for both people if it's sincere and enjoyable for them both. Otherwise, it can actually hurt them both because it's a lie. High quality attention is always exponentially better for everyone because it happens when both souls feel a genuinely positive connection and their positive energy is exchanged in a way that makes the giver and the receiver become better people when it happens. It's about healthy thoughts and positive emotions and relaxations when they're speaking without anxiety or pressure that comes from fear of being judged or rejected. Wouldn't you rather have someone want to be with you and love to sincerely say something good about why you're wonderful than know that they're just performing lip service? Knowing that your simple existence is making their personal world a better place is so much better than someone reciting a mouthful of cheap words that you know are only an act and that they don't really mean anything. True connection between two souls can take just a few minutes if it happens in a profound way. Once something like that happens, it is enough for both people. And true confidence only comes from healthy, quality interaction like that. What kind of damage are we capable of doing when we are at our worst? One of my all-time favorite situation comedies was Roseanne, and my absolutely favorite episode out of all the years she was on was her PMS episode. It was actually entitled PMS, I Love You. It had 37 different things that she did to make her husband, that she loved more than anything, completely crazy. It comes down to men are scared of upsetting women. Okay, some of the best things that I think. She asked the universal question, do you think I'm pretty? Okay, how much does that scare every single man when he hears it come out of a woman's mouth? She ironed the towels. She cataloged the coupons according to the expiration dates. She became very sexually aggressive. She was excessively affectionate. She was critical of her own appearance and others' appearances. Then she just, this family would fall apart if I wasn't here. Well, when she lost a fight, well, you don't have to throw it in my face. And then she was trying to invite a friend to a party. You don't have to come if you don't want to. You want to, don't you? She was micromanaging people down to the hand washing, the way they were hand washing. And then as they were about to dry their hair, stay away from those towels I just folded. Well, actually she ironed them. Okay. I'm sorry. I've been excitable, honey. Well, that's okay. Erison said, that's okay. And she turned around and said, what's your point? No, nothing. I have no point, dear. Her children and her sister were in another room going, oh my God, she's changing into another outfit. Or another personality. Her daughter said, I love you, Daddy. Immediately, the poor man with his wife and his daughter, two women coming at him, he had a minor anxiety attack. He was about to go into the bathroom when she called him, talking to himself, thinking to himself, this could be a suicide mission. Well, immediately he sees her, she sees him. Come here, you big sexy man. And that was totally different from the sexual encounter they had just minutes before. Well, then, out of nowhere, how can I go out when we're destroying the ozone layer? You know what? She's got 100 personalities. We've seen them all. No, apparently 101, 101. Now she's micromanaging the guests at his birthday party. Well, honey, you know, we should have a song. Shouldn't we have a song? Then not actually come up with one. Okay, well, one of her friends came and said, "Well, look, I don't know if you've noticed, but I got 40 balloons here just for the." She pops the balloon. "He's 39." "I know. I was getting him one to grow on." "Well, great. Now you have to apologize to my husband for ruining his party." Yes, Roseanne. Okay. Then she comes up to her sister and starts dancing with her because she doesn't have a man. "Well, it's okay. I know you don't have a man." Well, making her sister feel worse. Well, her other friend, "Well, we know it's just her hormones whipping her into a psychotic frenzy." Well, every woman has hormones. What's the point in bringing up that point? Well, then, of course, making the stripper that his friend brought to the party feel bad. "You're the reason why there'll never be a woman president." And then she turns to the friend, looks at her husband, and says, "But I blame you, Dan." What about that poor woman who was just trying to do her job? "Well, great. Now I have to go out and comfort her, thanks to you, Dan." So finally, her husband just falls apart, has a nervous breakdown. "When do I get my PMS?" And his sister-in-law says, "You feel better?" And he's like, "Yeah, okay, I do feel a little bit better now." So then, by the time that he's having his nervous breakdown, he comes back open to open the presents. Well, you know what? She's already opening the presents for him and then embarrassing him during the toast. Too much information about their, life in certain situations, right? Certain settings. Well, okay. As she's doing the toast, describing him, why she loves him, and he's so great, and the big rock that sits on my couch and watches TV all day, but he's my rock. I'm sorry, was that a compliment or an insult? No one knows, so everyone just drinks. And you know what? He's never able to express his feelings because she's not really willing to hear his perspective. Next day, she apologizes, and he says, "You know, honey, it's okay. I know. Sometimes you just have tough times." "Well, why are you taking it so personally?" "You know what? I'm not taking it personally." Okay. How many different things? I think there were a total of 37 in a 20-minute show. Every single thing that every single woman has ever done, when it's just one thing, maybe two in a given day, if we're talking about the worst of a worst of the worst that a woman could ever be, that's pretty exhausting for a man to be around. You know what? A lot of men are very exhausted by women, and a lot of them are actually scared of women. How many men in this country have genuinely become afraid of their wives, the women that they're dating? They stop the things that they would have done before because they don't want to deal with a woman who's upset. And women, when they're upset, they make a man crazy. I recently had a personal experience in a congregation. I've been in the same religion for 40 years, and I've been in 9 different congregations. A few years ago, I was in an English-speaking congregation. There were some pretty powerful women in that group. Again, the variety of people that I've been around in the same denomination, I've been in this religion for a long time. I've never seen a huge group of people this impacted by the women in it, like this congregation was. I ended up just moving to another congregation because the stress and anxiety that these women created almost killed me, literally. One day I had 7 seizures from the stress that being around them and their intense negativity created in my soul. When my husband took me to the hospital, the doctors told him that, you know what, one more seizure and she would have died. When I woke up the next day, I looked into his eyes and he said softly, "We need to go somewhere else, don't we?" I said, "Yeah." So we started looking for a new congregation the next day. When I found a Spanish-speaking group, same denomination, same city, just very different kind of group of people, I made the change thinking that I needed to get away from these evil women. They had completely castrated the men who were supposed to be running the congregation. The elders, not a single priest, not a pastor, but it was a group of men who were entrusted to run the whole congregation as a group, cooperatively. I knew that the men in this place were scared to death of the women that they were supposed to be shepherding. The women here were very scary people. They were manipulative and angry and bitter and hateful and vicious. And they knew full well that what they did to each other was unchristian. what they did to the men, including their husbands, was heartless. What they did to the people who reached out to them was unacceptable, but they had literally incapacitated the entire group with their malice. But as I became a part of the Spanish congregation, I saw that there were just as many horrible females in this group as there were in the other group. It's just that the men here knew how to keep those women in check. Ooh, wow, that doesn't sound very good. My sisters in Spanish knew that they had no business challenging the leadership of the men. They knew they needed to behave themselves, at the very least in public, and they knew that they had to adhere to the Christian standards that they claimed to adopt when they got baptized. So I really realized then it was about my disappointment in the men of the other congregation. Those men and their unwillingness to instruct the sisters, teach the sisters how to be loving and spiritual and humble, was a failure on their part in my mind. Look, there are going to be horribly destructive females everywhere we go in the world. That's just inevitable. It's about men knowing how to deal with those kinds of women. Men have a lot of potential power in the way that they deal with a woman. It's his choice whether he wants to use it or not, how he wants to use the power that he has. But I recently realized something, very recently. When a woman has her mind set on being hurtful, a man actually doesn't have the strength to fight her. He may assert some force to try to stop her, but ultimately she needs to make the concession. That's her choice. And for the last 2 years, I've met many men and women in Spanish-speaking congregations, all kinds of different countries, Central, South America, Mexico. Their understanding of truly loving behavior has helped me heal the wounds that the women from the other congregation created inside of me. They gave me affection and support and encouragement and appreciation, and they helped me believe that their love for me was genuine. They reminded me that what I am is priceless. I can now actually go back to the other congregation where I was before and be around the same group of people and genuinely smile without anger or pain in my heart. I actually saw two of the elders from that congregation in a coffee shop, and when I approached them and made friendly conversation, they saw my improved countenance. My face is more beautiful today because I smile more, and my energy is more positive now because I feel loved and appreciated by my brothers and sisters. My laughter is contagious because it's from my heart. I tried several times to end the conversation when I saw them and, you know, go home, but each time they asked me another question to keep the conversation going. It was funny because it actually took a phone call from my husband interrupting the conversation to get me to be able to say, "Sorry guys, I really have to take this, but it was great seeing you. Take care." But then the next day, I got a phone call from one of the teenage girls in that congregation asking me to help her move all of her things out of her mother's home. I was shocked. Then I asked, "What are you talking about, sweetheart?" Her mother was one of the people that tried several times. I tried several times to help when I was still in that congregation. But she was one of the women in that congregation that the men were afraid of. So they never actually helped her to genuinely improve her situation. I couldn't imagine what had gone on in the last 2 years since I'd been away, so I just got comfortable as I listened to her describe the situation. She explained, "My mother slit her wrists in front of me, and the woman who was supposed to be helping her called the police on her. They called an ambulance and she was taken to the hospital. I've been now legally removed from her custody. I have to go live with my dad now, but she's been let out of the hospital. She's back home. She's in the apartment. I don't want to go back there alone. Could you help me get my stuff out?" Wow. Now, first of all, the woman who called the police, she was one of the women I'd had a lot of problems with myself when I was in that congregation. She was the reason why I had to move out in the first place. She's someone that the elders are genuinely scared of. So the minute this girl told me her name, I wasn't the least bit surprised, and I immediately offered to help her. "Absolutely, sweetie, my husband and I will come over there with you. We'll be with you while you do that." We helped her pack her things and move them out, but since her mother was there, I knew that I needed to be strong and mature while I was there with her daughter, but still loving and gentle as I asked her, from her perspective, what's going on here? Why is your daughter moving out? Well, she knew that what she had done was bad, and she did feel bad. She said she was sorry several times over, almost in tears. But what she was telling me was different from what her daughter said. So I knew that even though the woman who called the police hates me intensely, I still needed to talk to her about what happened. First of all, so that I could get the firsthand version. Why did she do what she did, calling the police instead of an ambulance? And since she had been, I guess, assigned to this lady as the primary one responsible to be the support and spiritual guide for this woman, she needed to know that I was now involved in this situation when this girl called me, and I didn't want to say or do anything to them, for them, around them that would undermine any progress that she may have made with this lady and her daughter over the last 2 years. The woman and her daughter now were an important issue. But still, 2 years later, this woman was pulling all her same old tricks. She was being cold and angry and manipulative and distant. She refused to speak to me. I explained, look, no matter what has happened between us in the past, this isn't about us anymore. There is a young girl who is scared and alone. There is a woman who is volatile and upset. They are trying to bring me into this situation for some help. They both are now asking me for help, and I have a lot of my own thoughts and opinions about how this should go with each of them, but it's my moral responsibility to tell you everything that they tell me and cooperate with whatever you are doing, because you're the primary element in this situation. Can we just get together and talk about what would be the best thing to do for these ladies together? Nope, she still refused to speak to me. So I went to the men, the elders, and they were completely unaware of what was going on because they didn't even want to listen to me when I was just going to give them the update. And then when I asked them if they wanted to know what happened with the lady stonewalling me so that they could deal with these women in a more productive and spiritual way without my direct participation, which obviously wasn't going to happen, they said the exact same thing. You know what? We don't want to deal with these women. If this lady doesn't want to deal with you, that's her choice, and it's not your problem. Wow, that was when I knew, yeah. No, it's the women. The men here are genuinely scared, and they're uninformed. They have no idea what they're doing, and they're still not ready to deal with these ladies. They don't want me to give them information because that would force them to do something to fix the situation. Most of the time, don't we know? Men just don't want to know. Ignorance is bliss, but knowledge is power. Power comes with responsibility. Responsibility includes accountability. With a woman, like the one running the show in this situation, that's just too much work. Yeah, these men are weak, but these women are evil. And then I realized with this situation, more often than not, the women are the ones doing the harm. Men are just the ones avoiding having to deal with it. So the men are actually the lesser of two evils. And women have a kind of power over men that's inherent. It's part of nature. Ladies, we all know that we have the choice of how we will use our power. This woman who has stonewalled me, ignored the teenage girl, undermined the volatile woman, and paralyzed the men leading the congregation is an ugly soul. She's dirty and cold and heartless, and she knows full well that she has the opportunity to give the people what they need. She has the opportunity to provide that, but she cares more about herself than she ever will about others. She's just gross to be around, and she literally scares people when she smiles because they immediately feel the corruption inside of her. No smile can hide it. When people inevitably do what she wants, it's because she's used her power in a destructive way, literally harming people mentally and emotionally. You know what? It's just not worth it to fight with her. Give her what she wants. Ask yourselves, ladies, how many times has my behavior literally stopped other people from being and doing good things? How often do I use my genuine power in a destructive way? How much am I able to create positive situations and inspire other people to succeed? How aware am I of my words and actions and how they will affect the people in my life? how many of the things in my life that have hurt me were done by women? How many of them were done by men? How often, when they were done by women, were they done deliberately? How often, when they were done by men, were they just out of ignorance? How able am I to truly forgive from the heart? When I move on, how much do I proactively then use my powers for good? How often do I use them for evil? Do I even care about the quality of what I am and what I do in the world? We always have the example of putting the mask on yourself first. If you're traveling with a small child, always put the mask on yourself first. Well, why? Because if you're not alive, you can't do anything good. When you take care of yourself, your ability to do good things goes up. How many men would be absolutely fine letting a woman take time to take care of herself if it meant that she was in a good mood and she had strong power and she had positive energy to be an amazing thing like the one described in that passage from the Bible? Men would love it. They would be very generous and very patient letting people do things for themselves to make the world a better place. Ladies, celebrate your power. Use your strength in a good way. Maximize your wisdom and decide what you want to be. Then do everything in your life to manifest that. Women need you. Men need you. And the world needs you. Your responsibility makes you accountable for everything you do and say and are. Be a quality soul with everything in your life. And see how much everything in your life truly changes for the better. I'm Gabrielle Cardona. This is yours, mine, and ours.